It's a really deep-rooted need within us that we have to satisfy as humans to function in life. So it's definitely more than a design trend. It should be part of every aspect of the built environment. So when I'm detailing a building, when I'm thinking about the life cycle of the building, biophilic design is part of that. But it's not a luxury, it's part of architectural technology, and it should be woven into every part of life.
Welcome to Where It's At, the podcast from CIET, shining a spotlight on the future-focused design discipline of architectural technology. Know someone who could benefit from listening? Subscribe and share this episode with your network.
Hello, I'm Anne Vanner, chartered architectural technologist, architect, educator, and a co-founder of the School of Biophilia. And I'm your host for today's episode. Joining me is the other co-founder, Amelia Chasey, and we'll be taking a closer look at the story that sparked Amelia's passion for biophilic design and how this experience has shaped her vision, her work, her belief in biophilia as a movement for change. So let's get started. Welcome, Amelia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not so bad, thank you. For those who might not be familiar with the term biophilia, can you explain what it is, please?
Yes, so biophilia is the idea that humans have this innate and biological tendency within them to seek that connection with nature and other living things. Put quite simply, it explains why you prefer a view out the window. You feel really degraded and stuck when you're indoors and there's not any windows. It's not just a belief system, like a religion or philosophy. It's more than that. It's grounded in research from biology, psychology and environmental design. And the term was popularised by a biologist, Edward O. Wilson, in the 1980s. He first described it as an evolutionary adaptation, and our ancestors survived this by being attuned to natural environments, so we're hardwired to feel better when we're connected to them.
That's interesting. Could you just dig into that just a little bit more? Possibly some examples of how it impacts us as people?
Yeah, so biophilia, the research behind it explains that having that connection to nature and satisfying that urge within us to be close to nature. So nature can be things like natural lighting, views of nature. It can also be symbols of nature within your furnishings and things like that. And it doesn't just make you feel good on the surface. It deep down kind of affects your rhythms within you. It makes you feel good. It makes you sleep better. It's proven to improve health and well-being. And it's also gone on to the point of patients who have a view of nature are recovering quicker from illnesses and things like that. So it really affects every aspect of our life. And it's something that, as modern technology has developed, we've become more disconnected with. So tapping back into that aspect of nature and biophilia is satisfying that biological need within us and makes us happier overall and improves our health and well-being.
That's fascinating. So go on, where did your journey to the School of Biophilia begin?
So I first enrolled at university to study architecture technology over 10 years ago now, and with you as my director of studies and course leader as architecture technology. And back then I was really interested in that wide picture of the built environment and more than just designing a building for its sole purpose. So when I first studied for architecture technology, I was suffering with a chronic pain illness and I'd had a really severe spinal injury. So at that point in my life, I was classed as fully disabled. I was relying on a walking stick and a wheelchair, and I was relying on other pupils and students to kind of help me around the built environment and to just navigate everyday life. So the more I learned about the built environment, it also pushed on my own personal journey of how I was experiencing the built environment whilst also studying about architecture technology. So it really motivated me to keep pushing that research. And it was as part of my final studies project that I was looking at the benefits of artificial and natural lighting on patients within hospitals and other environments. So when you first enter a hospital and it's that really stark white environment, that can feel quite daunting, and it can also be like a trigger point to a lot of people. They avoid the doctors, they avoid the dentists. And a lot of that is down to the environment they're in. It's not so much the treatment or things like that are happening, but to even go and have an appointment with their GP can feel really overwhelming. So it was looking at how you first enter the built environment and how that lighting hits you and how you suddenly respond to that environment different within that first few seconds of being in the building. So that then led me on to do a master's in arts and health. And in that I specialised research in biophilic design and end-of-life care environments. So similar to chronic pain and end-of-life care, they're both illnesses that you're kind of at the end of your treatment. You're maybe not receiving treatment within a hospital and you're relying on other holistic and health therapies. So that could be physio, that could be meditation, mindfulness, any of that. And I think a lot of that comes back into the built environment and using the built environment, aspects of arts and architecture to help you respond to treatment. So biophilia leads on more than just nature and the environment. It really taps into how biophilia can be used to improve a person's pain. And I felt that really helped me on my journey. And that then led to more research into biophilic design and different people's use of biophilia within the built environment. So from the relationship that I had 10 years ago of being a student, it led to the School of Biophilia, about educating and inspiring other people about biophilia. And I think it's really, the message is really simple, that biophilia is for everyone. You know, it's really important in the early years when babies are just born, and again, they're under that really stark, bright light, through to end-of-life care where people's mobility is limited and relying on, you know, their immediate surroundings to engage them throughout the day and to not go crazy like some people feel, because they are just sat in a room with not a lot of visual engagement or sensory engagement. And that's when people start to decline. So that is how we got to School of Biophilia, and we're on the mission of bringing nature into everybody's life.
That's fascinating. It's a bit like when you go to the dentist, isn't it? You understand that there is a possibility of pain, but actually the environment itself is stressful, whether that's about seeing sort of the equipment or then just the sounds of the drills and what have you. And if you can sort of start to address that, that must be fabulous. So in what ways can the built environment hinder or support a person's health? I mean, you've talked very much about your own personal experience. Could you just sort of expand on that and talk about it? I suppose from the concept or the idea of the sort of the School of Biophilia, but what we're sort of trying to do, but how it sort of will impact people's health and well-being.
Yeah, so since COVID, a lot of people are obviously working from home, but when you look at the larger picture of it, by the time you're 40, you spent about 36 years indoors. So that could be in an office, it could be in your home office. And a lot of people now, their home offices are just their spare bedrooms. So they've got quite a small window, they haven't got any light, they haven't got a good setup. So when you think about the amount of time you're spent indoors and how that has an effect on you, so that can be your air quality within the room, it can be the light or thermal airflow and variability and shadows and things like that. It can be really motivating to be in a really amazing space, and it really affects your creativity and productivity whilst you're working. But it can also make you feel really poorly and unwell. So if you think about your day, whether it's in the office or at home, how do you feel when you go into your workspace in the morning? You know, are you happy? Are you excited? And how does that change throughout the day? So a lot of people get to 5:30 and they feel like they've run a marathon whilst they've just been sitting at a desk. So for me, we shouldn't feel like that in our buildings. You know, you can have a hard day, but you can still have your building can still be really good and important for you and how you act in the day. So I think biophilia is for everyone, and it's something that should be taught as part of architecture, technology and architecture, that we should be creating healthy, healing and biophilic buildings. Over the years where the building regulations and things like that have changed to improve the structure and stability of buildings, but then it's also brought up other problems with airflow, lighting, overlighting and things like that. So for me, biophilic design is a full life cycle, I suppose, view of the built environment that affects everyone. So it's not just the person sat on their desk, it's the cleaner who comes in the evening when the lighting's different, everything's turned off. It's how different people affect the building, and as designers, we need to think about that. And for me, biophilic design is the only tool that really taps into all your senses and different ways that you use a building.
Yeah, you talk about sort of senses. It's something we don't really talk about, is it? So how we actually design for our senses. I always get very excited about how we don't design for our ears. And going back to the dentist analogy, while I can sit in the dentist chair and close my eyes so I don't see what's happening, I can't switch my ears off.
So that's really interesting, actually, just leading back to that. So when you think about different environments like nurseries, which are so overcrowded with noise, and children feel so overstimulated, tapping into that and changing the sensory and noise environment can really be crucial to the child's development. That also then goes back to patients in end-of-life care who would love some noise, and you find that usually you have the TV on in the background or the radio, but they aren't engaging with it. It's just background noise. But with biophilic design, if we could provide an aspect to the built environment that isn't dead silence and isn't machines beeping, but is a noise that is sympathetic to the person in that room and that kind of sparks curiosity or memories in that person, that's when you start to get more involvement from the user in the building.
That's it. We did a dementia walk around Preston, and we were looking at the sonic environment in that sort of space, and how sounds have they can unlock memories, and how the sonic environment over those sort of decades has changed. So the older people were talking about the different sounds that the cars used to make or the trams used to make, and how those have sort of changed. And then if we also then think about sort of people with neurodivergence, how they sort of respond to that the urban environment must be a very, very sort of scary space for things like that.
It is. And I think that's when you get people kind of recluse and into the built environment, but the built environment they've kind of brought themselves into isn't satisfying that need either. So it's getting the balance for the individual and the user.
I suppose it goes back to that conversation, though, about agency as well, about people having the ability to interact with their building. So to be able to create an acoustic environment that they're happy with, or the ability to move to a space. I'm thinking about people working, the ability to sort of sit in a busy coffee shop when you need that kind of stimulation, or to find a quiet space when you need to head down and actually get on with some work and things like that. But if we just go back to sort of the idea behind the sort of school of biophilia, what are we trying to do there?
Know someone with a story to tell or a topic to explore? Email atpodcast@ciat.global to nominate a guest or a topic.
We are trying to make biophilia inclusive to everyone and to educate everyone about biophilia. So we've defined ourselves as a school of biophilia because it is an educational process, and we don't just mean people in school. We also want to educate people. I think there's a generation from school to the elderly that is really important here. You know, people who are already working and in the office who are wondering, why do I feel like this in the building? Why do I come home feeling drained and exhausted? Is it the job or is it the office you're sat in all day? So at the School of Biophilia, we produce CPDs, workshops, activities, helpful tips and tricks for everyone so that everyone is learning what biophilia is. So I think it's really important for offices. Like you said, people learn differently and they work differently. And there's different parts of the day. So I know at 3 o'clock, I need fresh air, a bit of sun, and I need a coffee, and I need to break the day up. And I know from biophilic design how I use the building that I'm in each day. But not everyone knows that. So I think what we offer is, one, the conversation to open up and discuss how different people work, and to provide that insight to the HR and higher up in the companies about what staff want and need. And also then providing the research that providing this choice and change in the built environment for the user has such good, you know, results of how people are working and their productivity. So if people can tap into their weaknesses and peaks in the day, they're getting more out of the day and achieving better results. So I think it's looking at the built environment for everyone, as I've said, but we have a catalogue of resources for so many different people that we've got something for everyone.
And is there evidence that supports this belief? I'm just wondering about those people who might feel that this is a bit woo-woo or a bit sort of out there.
Yeah, there is an overwhelming amount of research. And I think at the minute, biophilic design kind of sits within the built environment, the holistic therapies, and it doesn't really have its space at the minute. So it's a term that is discussed, and, you know, nature, why nature's this, and everyone knows it. But I think there's still a bit of a taboo subject in why it's so important. And, you know, it's not a joke. Having healthy and healing buildings and being in a building all day and working, thinking about what that does for your health is such an important topic. So not just for office workers. So as I mentioned before, there's research about improved hospital stays and how you respond to treatment. So for people who are at the end of life, they respond to treatment better when they've had biofilm design and nature brought into their built environment. So for me, when I first started researching biophilic design, it was a Terrapin Bright Green who released the 14 patterns of biophilic design. And to me, that really sums up biophilic design. So it breaks down biophilic design into 14 key parameters. And it's almost like a checklist for what might be missing in your built environment or what you could do to improve your environment. And from this has been further publications about why the economics of biophilia and why designing with nature in mind makes financial sense. So as a case study for offices who are feeling that staff are burnt out, overwhelmed, that's where we come in. We can provide the evidence and research and a, you know, breakdown case study of what's going on in the office that someone can change and improve the productivity and creativeness and overall happiness of people in the office.
So you see that there is plenty of research out there that is supporting this as a way of doing things. So it's more than a design trend. I think sometimes when people talk about biophilia, they possibly dumb it down to this idea it's about just bringing a plant in. Mm. I mean, that's a start, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that it is just putting a plant on your desk. And yes, that's great. It does. It's a really quick win for people. You know, they've got a view of nature there. They've got the smell of nature and sometimes the airflow as well. So if you get plants that improve your airflow, but it is so much more than that. It's a really deep rooted need within us that we have to satisfy as humans to function in life. So it's definitely more than a design trend. We are about educating people about this and that it is should be part of, you know, every aspect of the built environment. So when I'm detailing a building, when I'm thinking about the life cycle of the building, this biophilic design is part of that. It's, you know, it's not a luxury. It's part of architectural technology and it should be woven into every part of life.
So is that why the School of Biophilia is on a mission to inspire children, teachers and professionals to connect with nature?
Yes. So we not only want to educate the children or the pupils in education, we want to educate the teacher. So what we refer to is, you know, teaching the teachers so that what they learn from us can then be brought into their life as well. So that not only are they teaching the next generation about how to improve their health and well-being with nature and biophilia and how to interact with nature and the built environment, but they can also bring that into their life as well. So that their daily struggles or stress within the job is improved as well, because they would have breakout spaces. They would know when to take a break, how to design the building for them, because a lot of the buildings at the minute aren't purpose built. So providing them with the knowledge and experience and evidence of what's going on and why they feel like they do or why they're struggling, that's really important. And when you talk about the neurodivergent and ADHD and things like that, biophilia has been proven to reduce these symptoms. So providing people with the holistic approach of biophilia, of how to ground yourself or how to feel relaxed in the environment around you because of the design that is around you, that's really important. And I think as we're seeing the numbers of ADHD and neurodivergent children kind of increase, we need to know how to cater for that as designers and as other people just using the building around us.
Well, that's it. I was just thinking about what you were just saying there in terms of this sort of educational ripple. So if we can sort of tap into the children. They don't all have to go and become architectural technologists or work within the built environment. But if they have the skill set and the knowledge, if they become nurses and doctors and things like that, they can have an impact on the spaces that they're working and develop, I suppose, some techniques and tips for themselves. I'm just thinking about doctors and nurses in surgeries, not seeing daylight for days, those sort of things. What would you recommend that they do?
Firstly, reach out to us. I think biophilia is something, the 14 patterns of biophilia is a good starting point to understand what biophilia and biophilic design is. But for us to really understand the environment you're in, and it changes on different people. So I've worked in veterinary architecture, and vets as a profession is one of the highest professions with a suicide rate because of the staff amenities within that environment. So when I was designing these buildings, the patients obviously weren't people, so they couldn't voice up about what they wanted their environment to be. So again, the buildings weren't necessarily purpose-built, and the staff were just working in there. And, you know, sometimes we were having toilet breaks or staff breaks in a cupboard, and that was just normal for them. No one ever questioned it. So if we can tackle that kind of really hard discussion of, you know, you're dealing with sometimes death and pain and helping other people, but you can't do that if you can't help yourself. So there is so much to what we want to do at the School of Biophilia, and what we do is for everyone. We can cater it to everyone, but reach out to us, have the conversation, and let us kind of, we find that doing a survey of the building is really good. So identifying what isn't working great for the building and for the user, for the patients, for the cleaner, allows us to really provide a bespoke approach to what that person may want to do and on what budget and for what time frame. So like I said, there is really quick wins, like plants on the desk, change of lighting, but it's so much bigger than that.
When you mentioned sort of about vets and sort of where they were taking toilet breaks, it then takes me thinking about sort of on construction sites, temporary, what we describe as temporary sites, but for those workers who are using those, they're not temporary, they move from one to another. So basically, I suppose the line of thought is if you can have a positive impact on those kinds of spaces, then you'll have an impact on people's health and well-being. So possibly start thinking about reducing suicide rates in construction workers, but also possibly more productivity as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose creating an environment that is more inclusive, drawing other people from different backgrounds into that sort of workspace, so dealing with the skill shortage that we have in construction as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So is there anything else that you'd just like to add about sort of the School of Biophilia or your journey? How is it now in terms of, you started off talking about sort of your own personal journey now as a practicing architectural technologist?
Yes, I think that's really interesting. So as a practicing architectural technologist, I feel like I am every day trying to speak to people about my own experience, why it's really important to think about these things, whether it's other designers or other people who may be using the building. And I think part of biophilic design and the School of Biophilia is opening up the conversation to the built environment. So like I said, a lot of people, like vets, doctors, practices and things like that, that's normal for people because it's how it's been for the last 10, 20, 30 years. But by us having the conversation, we are making people realise that things can be better. There are other ways to improve the health and well-being, and providing the evidence that suggests changing this about your environment will mean that you're working better, you're sleeping better, and you're doing a better job. That's the whole picture of what we're doing. So reach out to us. We have lots of workshops, free activities as well. Like I said, we want to be inclusive to everyone. So we provide workshops, activities. We do a bit of everything. We've done a lot of articles as well for the Journal of Biophilic Design, and we're also really keen about getting in to do some CPDs at offices, because I think there's a big gap there about what we're doing and what's going on in the built environment.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much for that. So Amelia, thank you very much for being here and for sharing your story. We really appreciate the time and effort that's gone into this, and wish you and the School of Biophilia all the best. Thank you.
You've been listening to Where It's At, A huge thanks to our guests and to you for listening. Want to learn more about architectural technology, how to progress your career, or how to work with a chartered architectural technologist? Head to architecturaltechnology.com to find out more. The contents and views expressed by individuals in the Where It's At podcast are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of the companies they work for or the host. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as advice.